Margot, good morning.
Oh, good morning. It's lovely to be with you. Thank you, Nathaniel.
Thank you so much for joining us. So, Margot, you know, I think most people kind of know what insomnia is, but could you go into a bit more depth in explaining what exactly it is and how does it affect people who have it?
So we're talking here about work-related insomnia versus, I guess, more of a general term of insomnia. When we're talking about work-related insomnia, we're talking about how work potentially interferes with somebody's normal or healthy sleep patterns. And we're talking about things that are, you know, maybe waking in the middle of the night, running over your to-do list. It might be, you know, getting home late after traveling interstate and then getting up early and, you know, therefore having really short working or sleeping hours. And work interfering with the amount of sleep that you're actually getting and the quality of your sleep. We also know that for mental illness, a disturbed sleep pattern or a change in somebody's sleep pattern can be a pretty good early indicator that somebody's mental health is declining. So there's a couple of elements here that we need to address as employers and also be aware for ourselves.
And what's this main cause of work-related insomnia that makes it seem like it's becoming more of a bigger thing?
I think people are starting to recognise the benefits of sleep and the mass movement, I guess, in Australia around well-being and health and people's understanding is improving and increasing, which is terrific. We're certainly seeing that in mental illness, that people's awareness and understanding about particular types of mental illness, such as anxiety and depression, is going up. So I think we've got a general population knowledge increase, which is a great thing. And part of that is recognising the value of sleep. And I think we're starting to see people join the dots between what poor sleep does in terms of increased risk, increased access to, you know, the opportunity for them to actually get in and lead a productive life. So we're really starting to see people join those dots.
And is there a certain subgroup of people who are most likely to be affected by this mental health condition?
Certainly from our indicators of a thriving workplace survey, which is a national survey, we know that the data is telling us that 22% of those surveyed are experiencing work-related insomnia. When we look at those numbers a little bit more closely, we know that they're more likely to work in a large organisation at 26% and less likely to work in a small organisation. We also know that this is work-related insomnia does affect people in higher management positions, and the industry hotspots or the industries that have been shown through the data where this is particularly an issue are people who identify working for public administration and safety, people who work in education and training, arts and recreation, and healthcare and social assistance. So that in and of itself can tell us quite a lot about the industries, the types of work people are doing. Perhaps, you know, healthcare is certainly around people working shift work as nurses as an example. That's very obvious. But when you start to look at education and training, you start to think about, well, what is it about that job design or that stress that might be influencing somebody's sleeping patterns?
If you're just joining us here on The Daily this morning, we're speaking with Margot Lydon, a CEO of Superfriend, about the issue of workplace-related insomnia. So, Margot, what are the stigmas surrounding mental health in the workplace?
Certainly, stigma is a significant issue. We know from, again, the indicators of the Thriving Workplace 2018 results that we have a really significant concern here in Australia. We know, as an example, that people who are experiencing mental illness, and it's now one in five Australian workers experiencing mental illness, 45% of those people who are experiencing mental illness are also experiencing stigma in the workplace. For the broader population that we surveyed, it is at 13%. So stigma about mental illness in the workplace is a significant issue. And when we think about what that does, it does prevent people quite often from reaching out and asking for help. It prevents people also from sharing with their manager what might be really helpful for them in how their work could be crafted quite differently to support their health and well-being, including their mental health. And quite often it's also associated with people feeling that they're not going to get that promotion if they disclose. So we really need to build trust within our work environments. We need to have high trust relationships, particularly between a staff member and their manager, so that somebody can come in and say, look, I'm not coping okay. There's things that are going on in my life. I may have been diagnosed or I may not. I may not be sleeping well. These are the sorts of conversations that if we can build trust and a culture of care, we can actually help people to be their very best, irrespective of whether they have a mental illness or not.
Well, taking that into consideration, what else can be done in the workplace to improve mental health and well-being and, well, develop that trust you're talking about?
I think it's understanding that workplace mental health and well-being is complex. There's a number of factors that go into making a thriving workplace. We have in the indicators of a thriving workplace 40 scientifically validated indicators. Now, one of those indicators, as an example, is people greet each other and say good morning and use please and thank you. So we're not necessarily talking about hugely expensive or particularly challenging or difficult indicators to ensure that there is a thriving workplace. But they fall under the domains or the headings of leadership, and it's really having leaders who are proactively encouraging and promoting good mental health policies and practices. They act as champions in their workplace. Having a sense of belonging and connectedness is incredibly important for people's mental health and well-being. It minimises somebody's at-risk factors for suicide and for mental illness, but it's also about that sense of belonging and connectedness, that sense of community where people can come together and achieve something greater than just themselves on their own. Policies and practices that are actually lived and breathed inside an organisation are really important. Capability, looking at your development of your people, how are you training, how are you educating them around mental health and well-being, looking at the opportunities to bring out the very best in people, so taking a strengths-based and a values-based approach. I think the last area, which is sort of an all-encompassing area, is under culture, and that is where we're talking about a culture of care where people can not only feel that they have that trust in the workplace, but there is, attachment with the job that I do today to the greater purpose and meaning of the organisation, and that I feel an alignment to that. So sometimes it's helpful for leaders in a business or an organisation to help people attach and find meaning and purpose in their particular job and how that helps the greater good of the community.
Well, hopefully some businesses can add, action these remedies very soon. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Marco.
You're very welcome, Nathaniel. And please, for anyone listening out there, we have a number of resources to help people put this into action on the Superfriend website. So we'd be pleased for people to download that and make their workplace a thriving workplace.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Margo.
You're very welcome.